Greetings, meme warriors, Kekistani clerics, and Gamergate necromancers, and welcome to HBR News number 163. Disney's less sexist pirates, Lasseter leaving, and anti-GGer at extra credits accused. I am your host, Brian Martinez, and I am here with my esteemed alt-right entitled rape apologizing, room cleaning, incel, red pill, Reddit posting, fedora tipping, fascist Pepe loving, Trump supporting, Nazi apologizing, this is America memeing, women enslaving poo-poo heads to look at the best feels, funnies, and what the fuck to discuss, slam bam badger style. Before we begin, I'm going to ask that you please smash that like button because it really helps our analytics, and if you haven't subbed, please do so. Finally, be sure to turn on that notifications bell so you know when we go live. Now, double check to make sure your eyebrows aren't falling off, and let's dive right into it. Today's Polecat panel consists of Mike J., who I imagine is fully erect after the announcement of Fallout 76. Am I correct in assuming that?
Unfortunately, no. I have some gripes.
Oh, well. Maybe we'll get into that sometime. Hannah, puns of mass destruction Wallen. Doctor free to speak, as long as you agree with me, Random Cam. And me, the Supreme Doge in charge. We have a great show for you guys today, so please be sure to continue the conversations both in the chat and in the comments section. On this week's HBR News Show, we'll be looking at some new developments with the Me Too movement, some changes at Disneyland and at Pixar, as well as Steam and Tecmo with their own surprises. So keep it here because there's a lot to talk about. And don't even get me started on the German porn thing. That's going to be a lot of fun. And if you are one of our patrons or you're thinking about becoming one, you might want to stick around afterwards for the patron-only after show. H.P. Lovecraft has been known for his weird and terrifying stories of elder gods and other dimensional consciousnesses? invading and trying to dominate the world of man. How can you improve on such spine-tingling terrors? Well, add some feminism. And then even Azathoth and Cthulhu himself won't be able to compare to the strong female character that author Kee Johnson has planned. Anyway, if you'd like to participate in our after shows either as an audience member or a participant, please consider becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. And if you don't want to wake up one morning to find yourself unable to find our content because YouTube finally dropped the axe on our channels, go to badgerfeed.com. That is badgerfeed.com. Now, let us get into the first story because we have a lot of them. And I have a hard time saying no to such juicy stuff, I guess.
Would you like my juicy stuff?
I would like your juicy stuff, Mike.
Well, you really can't say no.
No, I can't say no.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
All right. So we're going to go into Pirates of the Caribbean and more with Mike J. Go ahead. Take it away, Mr. J.
Thank you, Brian. So the first one we got is Pirates pushes pandering and Pixar punishes possible pervert.
Heyo. Alliteration is fun.
It is.
I like it.
After 2 months of closure, Disneyland Amusement Park has reopened their iconic Pirates of the Caribbean attraction with the announcement, quote, Pirates of the Caribbean at Disneyland Park is back from refurbishment, just in time for summer. However, the ride isn't quite the same as former park guests might remember. During the closure, one scene from the ride, depicting tied-up women being auctioned off, has been removed. The current scene now depicts pirates of both genders auctioning off stolen treasure to the townsfolks. When announcing the makeover, Disney staff noted Walt Disney's desire that all the rides be updated from time to time to help attract return visitors.
Pirates of the Caribbean is changing. I've never been on the ride, so I don't have a whole lot to say on it, but it's nice to see that Disney is being more inclusive with its piracy endorsements. I don't know. It's kind of nutty. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mike J., or anybody else?
History is politically incorrect. Can't acknowledge that history happened. And anything that is shown from history in any kind of fiction is doubly politically incorrect, because if fiction admits that these things happened, it's obviously endorsing them and not using them to set the scene as having taken place during a time when things were worse than they are now. Therefore, everything from history must be eliminated. There is no yesterday. We have to just go on as if nothing ever happened, and we can make the same mistakes all over again because we've forgotten all about them.
I'm just rather chuffed that this was the reason that it was closed last time I went. This was why I had to miss that, and with a person who had never been to the park before, why we both did not get to experience it.
Wait till you see what they do with Magic Mountain.
Why is there not being a Jewish Disney princess? Why have they not done a Jewish story? Yeah, they've had an Asian princess and an Arabian princess, and every kind of princess except Jewish. Where's the Jewish princess, Disney? Why ain't you being inclusive?
You racists.
All right, is there anything that Disney didn't want changed, no matter what the social mores become? Was there a little footnote there on his notes?
That's something to think about. All right, Mr. J, go on. Speaking of Disney and fails.
All right, so after an 8-month leave of absence, it's been announced that John Lasseter will be leaving both Disney and Pixar due to allegations of sexual harassment. As the chief creative officer for both companies, Lasseter is responsible for some of the company's earliest successes, including Toy Story 1, Toy Story 2, and A Bug's Life. In a memo released at the start of his leave of absence in November, Lasseter stated to his fellow employees, quote, "I've recently had a number of difficult conversations that have been very painful for me. It's never easy to face your missteps, but it's the only way to learn from them." He continues, quote, "Collectively, you all mean the world to me, and I deeply apologize if I have let you down. I especially want to apologize to anyone who has ever been on the receiving end of an unwanted hug or any other gesture they felt crossed the line in any way, shape, or form. No matter how benign my intent, everyone has the right to set their own boundaries and have them respected. Lasseter will stay on with Pixar as a consultant until the end of 2018. It's unclear who will replace him, although there is speculation that it could be Pete Docter, director of such films as Up and Inside Out, or the director of Frozen, Jennifer Lee."
Oh. Well, another one bites the dust. That's all I'm saying about that.
Yeah, I'm regretting all the Michael Jackson jokes. Because he went through... He was like the prototype for everyone else. A few years after Jackson's answering for every time he's hugged a child, it'll happen to every man.
Mm-hmm.
This is why men have already learned not to hug children, not even if they ask you for one.
Yeah, this is the only direction that the Me Too movement can go into. It's just more people losing their jobs because of stuff that probably prior to this was just nothing really to make a big deal about. So RIP John Lasseter. What were you going to say?
This guy was, he was a pretty big deal at both these companies.
I mean,
they're not just losing a figurehead here. They're losing a real driving force. This is going to really hurt them, and they're really driving it home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's going to hurt them. Wasn't John Lasseter the guy behind The Incredibles? That was like my favorite Pixar movie.
I think possibly.
And also The Iron Giant? I think so. I'm gonna look it up real quick.
You know, even if the guy had not been...
That's Brad Bird,
such a well-known guy.
Even
if he had not been such a well-known guy, he hadn't been, you know, somebody that everybody would notice this happening to. The problem that I'm seeing over and over again is the precedent that is being set is that your behavior now, like everybody's behavior now, we judge everybody's behavior today based on today's standards. And 20 years ago, we judged everybody's behavior based on the standards of that day. And 50 years ago, we judged everybody's behavior based on the standards of that day. And that led to people... tailoring their behavior to suit the standard of the day. So people tailor their behavior today to suit the standards of today. And that's going to be the way it is forever. We're always going to see... people are going to have to tailor their behavior to suit the standards of the day if they want to survive in society. The problem is, now you can't do that and know that you're going to survive in society. Because 20 years from now, if there is something that is dramatically different about the behavioral standards, and you lived up to today's behavioral standards, and you tailored your behavior, general behavior, anything from sexual conduct to how to greet people, to your work ethic, to what you eat and how you eat and who you eat with and everything else. You can come back 20 years later and you can get accused of a crime that didn't exist or a type of misconduct that wasn't misconduct. And people will ignore whether that was a common way of greeting or a common way of going out dining and so on. And you're in trouble. And that's what all these men that are going through this, there's a degree to which all of them, even the ones that genuinely did something, they're all being treated as though behavior that was normal and expected at the time, and behavior that was not considered an offense to anyone or a violation of anyone's boundaries, they're all getting treated as if, by today's standards, since it is by today's standards, they somehow knew that, and they're guilty of deliberately doing something. And I think 20 years from now, when the pendulum swings the other way, how many of these women that are making these accusations are we going to come back on and say, well, this woman publicly accused this man of misconduct 20 years earlier, based on standards that existed 20 years later that shouldn't have applied to his 20-year-old behavior? You know, are we going to start lynching them next? And then 20 years down the road, are we going to start lynching the people that held them accountable? And, you know, this is going to get really stupid in the long run.
It is really stupid. It's already really stupid.
It's already stupid, but it's going to get to the point where you've heard the term walking on eggshells. That's not going to be an extreme enough term for the way people are going to have to do things. And honestly, I think this is just another example of how the feminist mentality, because this is beyond gynocentrism. This is outright women worsting. The feminist mentality is very short-sighted. And it's not only costing us our business relationships and our entertainer fan relationships and so on with men who have been in business or who have been involved, you know, who've been in the public eye for decades. It's actually costing us our ability to navigate social situations, and it could be permanent. It could cost us that ability forever.
Not if that meteor I've been praying for gets here.
Well, I mean, there's the only solution at some point is going to be nobody can be alone with anybody else. Nobody can touch anybody else. Nobody can talk to anybody else without a chaperone, you know, and so on.
Everything.
It's we're going to end up in that kind of society where everything you do is wrong. And you have to have, you know, the thought and feeling police there to make sure that you don't fuck up, or if you do, you get punished for it.
Well, it gets better. I mean, we have more stories. I also have a super chat here from French Honey Badger. He says, Walt Disney's anti-Semitism was literally communist propaganda because he was against Hollywood unionists. And if you're curious about more on that, actually, the Rageaholic made a video recently called Hollywood Was Always Red. You might want to check it out. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a interesting point. So let's go on to the next story, which is also related and a little bit, let's say, unsurprising. Go ahead, Mr. J.
Thank you, Brian. All right, roll the credits and reset the counter. James Portnow has found himself at the center of a hashtag MeToo-style social media firestorm. Portnow, one of the driving forces behind the video game-based YouTube series known as Extra Credits, has come under fire by his ex-girlfriend, Soraya Ayin Haji. Haji also used to work for extra credits as a writer until the breakup with Portnow in late 2017. Recently, she's taken to Twitter to accuse Portnow of emotional manipulation, gaslighting, and harassment, which ultimately led to her quitting extra credits around the time of the breakup. With the internet mob turning on Portnow, extra credits released a statement in which they detail the investigation they'd launched into the matter. Quote, about half a year ago, one of our employees left extra credits. They later claimed that another employee had harassed them out of the company. To verify the claim, extra credits hired an independent HR firm to investigate the matter, and was ready to abide by all findings, including firing anyone found responsible of committing misconduct. After investigating, the HR firm found no evidence of improprieties with regards to the claims of workplace harassment. It should be noted that when hashtag Gamergate was in full swing, Portnow was an ardent detractor. During the extra credits panel at MAGFest, he incorrectly labeled John, Total Biscuit Bane, RIP, as one of hashtag Gamergate's leaders before slandering him, and also compared hashtag Gamergate supporters to the Ku Klux Klan.
Of course he did. Well, so another anti-GGer was accused of harassment. Just another day in the life. And again, I will say what I've said before. I'm not saying that it was justified that he was accused of this, because it's difficult to know whether male feminists are being accused of sexual harassment because they're sexual harassers, or whether they're being accused of sexual harassment because of their proximity to feminists that are more likely to make accusations because of their low opinion of men and maleness.
I would say it's not just because of their low opinion of men and maleness. It's because men make handy excuses for their failings. So this chick leaves the company, and she needs a reason why she left besides "I failed at this job." And the easiest thing for her to do is accuse somebody of making it impossible for her to succeed at that job.
And Especially with the breakup, too.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
And that's, like, that right there, I can't take the accusation fully seriously for two reasons. First of all, that the timing of it kind of indicates that this is being used as an excuse for her failure. Second... usually, if human resources can't find anything, like, that's kind of bad for the chick that's making the accusation, because it's human resources' job is to find something and get rid of you when an accusation has been made, and they can't get rid of her because she's already gone, right? So they can't. They can't do anything at that point to prevent her from taking any further action. The only thing they can do is cater to her if there's any remote sign of harassment. And so unless there was no documentation and this guy was particularly skilled at being sneaky, I highly doubt the accusation, but this is, we're not allowed to tell women who hang out with criminals and then end up victimized. Well, the company you keep determines your level of safety, even though, I personally would have been much better off as a teenager if somebody had told me that over and over again until it got through my thick skull, or maybe locked me in my room. But, the same thing is true with feminists. I don't want to blame the victim in terms of, it's your fault if you get hit with an accusation. But the company that you keep does determine your level of safety. And if you hang out with a group where this type of false accusation is more prone to happening, and I'm not saying the accusation is proved false, I just have a great deal of doubt regarding it. But if you hang out with a group of people that they're more oversensitive towards sexual conduct, and they're more likely to deem a wider variety of interpersonal conduct to be sexual misconduct and so on, you're putting yourself at a higher risk for false allegations. And this is the upshot.
Yeah, there are several tiers of several categories of crime in this department. It's like tier one is harassment, tier two is sexual assault, like tier three is rape, and they're all cacophonisms for something else. Like sexual assault is their word for, you know, brushing past someone's shoulder. Rape is their way of saying consensual sex. And harassment is tier one. If all she's able to accuse someone of is harassment, that means he did something not as bad as harassment.
Well, you're actually onto something there, Doc. What she deemed harassment was he was trying to contact her to, even by her own words, make peace. And she had, I guess, blocked him on something, so he went to a third party to contact her, and that's when she responded, "This is harassment. You are harassing me."
She dropped the H word, and that's all they need. All they needed for
harassment.
A while was the good old R word. That works in extreme cases, but they needed a mild version of it, and the H word. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not harassment. That brings us to the fourth tier, the crocodile tears. That's and it's one of the most predatory things that women do outside of engaging in actual sexual predation. They exploit men's peacemaking tendencies, men's desire to not be the bad guy, basically, for victim points and attention, and it looks like that's what's going on here. And I'm like, you know, I've had people that I've pushed out of my life because there was something incompatible and everything, and I've had people come talk to me about it and everything, and you know, you simply put your foot down and say, you know, this is it, I'm not discussing this anymore. But it's not harassment to ask you to communicate that once. It's harassment if you've communicated that repeatedly and the person ignores it. I've been through that. And you know, you have to take the next step, get authority involved. But it's the line between what is and isn't harassment isn't gray. It's not like, you know, you don't know that harassment is a repeated behavior. Everybody should know that. It's easily available online. You can see the laws. And to call asking you for a chance to leave and end the contact that you have with each other on peaceful terms, harassment, somebody's got to be really entitled, or they're stretching desperately for a reason to get sympathy from other people as a victim.
Yeah, good point. All right, so let's move on to the next story, also related in a way, because it's about video games and stuff. So, Mr. J, if you could.
Thank you, Brian. Live and Let Game. The online video games distributing juggernaut known as Steam has announced recently that it plans to take a more hands-off approach when it comes to curating what makes it to their storefront. In a statement titled, "Who Gets to Be on the Steam Store?", the company lays out their policies and as they stand and the principles behind those policies. They state, quote, "We've decided that the right approach is to allow everything onto the Steam Store, except for things that we decide are illegal or straight-up trolling." They close with stating, quote, "We won't be making significant changes to what's arriving on Steam." The creator of Oculus Rift, Palmer Luckey, called this a huge boon for VR software, stating, quote, "Getting onto a platform with visibility and reliable payment processing is practically a prerequisite for success in the games industry." While many gamers and those opposed to censorship have celebrated Steam's statement, there are those unhappy with their words. In an article for the gaming website Rock Paper Shotgun, Dominique Tarasin calls Steam's statement, quote, "taking a stand against taking a stand. Rachel Weber of website Games Radar Plus states that, quote, "It's important to remember that Valve takes a significant cut of everything sold through Steam, so it's putting itself in a position where it could directly profit from racist and sexist content."
Wow.
If you're taking a stand against a stand, then you're both standing up and not really going anywhere.
What the hell is Games Radar Plus? What the fuck is
that? Yeah, how did the customers feel? Like, when you said, okay, live and let live, did the customers complain? No, they all said, thank fuck, you haven't caved. Good on you, Steam. Thank you for serving your customers in the way we would like. Who's doing the complaining? Yeah, games journalists. You don't have to listen to them. Da-da. You don't have to listen to them. Da-da.
There you go, guys. Anime titties are safe once again. We can access them on Steam. And this is a good move, though. Seriously. Just give the people what they want. Don't let the Butthurt Brigade influence, you know, the products you put up there. I thought for a minute there they were going to do that, though. I thought for a minute there they were actually going to, like, pull all the adult content and the ultra violent stuff off of there. Ever since that one game where you get to be a school shooter, just edgy shit. I thought that was it, but thank fuck, to like Mike said, thank fuck.
You know, I think this explains quite a lot about why social justice warriors hate capitalism. Because, this is where the money is. The customers are where the money is. And if the customers want something and a company wants to make money, they're not going to listen to a bunch of whiners who they're not making money from tell them how they have to interact with their customers. They're gonna interact with their customers. They're going to sell things, and people are going to buy them. And the people involved are going to be happy no matter what the whiners do and say. And obviously, the crybullies of the social justice brigade there, they're never going to be satisfied. They're never going to be happy. There's always going to be something politically incorrect. You could make something perfect according to their rules, and they would still have some way that you have to fix it, because that's how they make their money. And that's how they get their attention on their publications and their so on. They make their money getting paid to whine about stuff. Now, as far as the school shooter game is concerned, just because something is in poor taste doesn't mean it can't have any value. And that game, my understanding, that game, you could be anybody. You could play any role in that game, including the
cops
students.
Too.
Yeah, you could play the cops, you could play the students. On one hand, yeah, it's in poor taste. Of course it's in poor taste. A lot of things are in poor taste, but they're still interesting and there's still value to them. And the value of something like that is, if you want to take the in-the-moment paralysis-inducing fear out of something, give people a chance to experience it over and over again safely. And in a fictional setting, there's a local, somewhat local to my area, business that they lock you in a room and you got to figure out how to get out. It's like those games online, you got to figure out how to get.
They do it in real life.
I've never done that, but I know about them. They're like these. You get locked in a series of rooms. I guess it's like puzzles you have to solve to get out. Yeah.
To get out, and you got to find, you know, the key to the next thing and stuff like that. These are things where, you know, some people would be terrified at the idea of being trapped in a building like that. But you go in and you experience it in a safe setting where you can, you know, cry for help and they'll let you out, or you have a set amount of time to get out, or you lose the game and stuff like that. It helps you to work your way through it. And the idea of somebody coming into your place of work or your school or any place else that, you know, you're going to be at a concert or something like that and starting to to shoot up the place is just a horrifying idea for anybody. Nobody wants to go through something like that. Nobody wants to be in a terrifying situation. But poking at it, you know, and visualizing it and participating in a fictionalized version of it, role-playing it, essentially, may take enough of the out of the darkness out of it, that if you ever go through an experience like that, it's like a fire drill. You go through an experience like that, it may not be as paralyzing in its scariness. You may have more presence of mind in that situation. And you may not have, you know, the thought of it happening may not be as terrifying to you. And it's actually a good thing to be able to desensitize yourself that way. It's why we do tornado drills in organized settings. It's why we do fire drills and you know, things like that. You know, schools all have fire and tornado drills, and they now have active shooter drills too. So the students will know what they are supposed to do in that situation. I don't see that it's that big of a deal to have a game like this. Everybody freaking out about this game, they really haven't thought about it in depth. They just knee-jerk reacted.
And if you think no one's traumatized by the idea of eating mushrooms and then jumping around getting chased by those mushrooms, think again. Super Mario didn't cause PTSD. It helped me through it.
In before escape rooms are also getting banned because of sexism and bigotry and insensitivity and stuff like that. I'm telling you, it's going to
happen.
Where
are the transgender escape rooms?
Yeah, exactly. Why? Why do you have to use a key to get out? That's a bit phallocentric. So I'm start the clock. That's all I'm saying. We'll see how long it takes before that becomes a problem. I already Googled it, and so far people still like them, but the Huffington Post did make a pretty interesting article. So, but no outright criticism yet, but it's coming. I can tell you that. Okay, so let's move on to the next story. Should be interesting. Just give me a second here while I switch. Tell us about Dead or Alive 6.
Thank you, Brian. Is Dead or Alive dead on arrival? Fighting game series and occasional beach volleyball-based jiggle physics simulator, Dead or Alive is growing up, according to developers Koei Tecmo and Team Ninja Developers. In an article for IGN, the director of the upcoming Dead or Alive 6, Yohei Shimbori, stated, "We want to make a more cool and mature Dead or Alive this time. And to that end, we made a conscious decision to make the characters less sexualized." Shimbori continues later in the article, stating, "It goes without saying that this decision is heavily influenced by the fact that the industry is moving away from overtly sexualized female characters in general, but Team Ninja seems to have a concrete vision behind this shift in style. If you look at the game's concept art, you can see that Kasumi is no longer just a fantasy figure for young boys. She's a warrior." It's unclear if Shimbori is aware of the recent success of games such as Nier Automata, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and Dragon's Crown Pro, all of which have done very well, and all of which feature, quote, overtly sexualized female characters.
Anime titties. Yeah.
For life.
So she's no longer just a fantasy figure for young boys. She's a warrior, i.e. a fantasy figure for young girls. That's what you're getting at, right?
And still a fantasy figure for young boys.
A warrior is a fantastical thing for a for a girl to be.
Yeah, apparently. The only thing I wanted to say about this Dead or Alive story was Dead or Alive as a fighting game franchise has always... I'm a big fighting game nut. I like playing them. And I have some of the Dead or Alive games. But the thing is, they've always been in the shadow of other fighting games that have just been more popular, and they just have better mechanics and more people play them. Games like Tekken, games like Soul Calibur, Street Fighter, and King of Fighters, and so many others. Dead or Alive never came out from there. It's always like that kind of B-list fighting game that people like to play because they found the breast physics to be hilarious and everything was really over the top. But in terms of the game depth and everything, it just was never there. So what I think they're trying to do is they're trying to find a way to directly compete. And they probably think that the way they depicted the sexualized characters may have been a way of distracting people from the fact that the game engine itself was just okay. And maybe even a bit mediocre, you know. And so the only way this would possibly work is if they actually improve the game itself. If they just take the breast out, then they're taking out the one thing that people who do buy the games are completely aware of. Because if people are playing it for the depth of gameplay and the mechanics, they're probably more likely to buy something else. So I don't know that this is a wise move. And it is actually ill-timed, like to what Mike was saying, because I was going to bring that up, is that these other games that do feature, you know, overtly sexualized characters, that everybody just finds more funny and tongue-in-cheek and, you know, just kind of silly and over-the-top. They're moving away from, even though they're one of the ones that kind of, dare I say, busted out with this as a as a selling point. So, I don't know. But this may not work out well for them. So, potentially RIP Dead or Alive franchise, because I don't know how you're going to do another beach volleyball game if their boobs are just, like, stuck on there, like, Lara Croft PS1 pyramids.
This is your not so regularly scheduled reminder that nobody slut shames women more than feminists. You know, boobs are bad, right? Because men like them. Any other time, any other time they want the right to walk down their street with their tits out and slut walks and blah blah blah. But if they think men might be enjoying it, that's offensive, because male sexuality apparently, nobody slut shames women more than feminists.
No one's allowed to.
Yeah.
No, only feminists. Exactly. So go ahead, somebody. I heard an inhale before speech. No, I got a super chat, real quick. French Honey Badger gives us $5 and says, she's no longer a fantasy figure for your boys. She is now a fantasy figure for tomboys.
Still looking for a gender-switched version of that word. There still isn't one.
A word for what?
No. Nope.
So for the male version of tomboy?
That was just tom girl.
Your friendly yearly reminder that there's no such thing as a tom girl.
Yeah, no, there's no, oh look, he's effeminate. Isn't that cute? And tomboy anymore is, oh look, she's masculine, isn't that cute?
You'd think we first invent the concept of a tom girl and then maybe think about 6-year-olds transitioning gender. You'd think there'd be the in-between thing, but we skipped right over to fancy land there.
Well, that's actually, somebody asked me the other day why there are so many more trans women than there are trans men. And my answer was, I think when gender dysphoria hits, it hits men and boys harder because the standards for, you know, men and boys are you be masculine or you're not masculine. Where girls and women can get away with being gender atypical. We don't have to be constantly effeminate to be considered feminine. And so I think even when women and girls experience gender dysphoria, they can still be comfortable being cis and not worrying that they're not living up to something or that it doesn't feel necessarily as wrong to be in a female body and not have all the hallmarks of femininity. And I think that may be a large part of the reason why that experience happens, why that leads to more transitioning from male to female than from female to male. It's not the only explanation, and it's certainly not the only reason, but I think that's a definite contributing factor. And yeah, Tomboy Rob Wynn's super chat is kind of perfect. Nancy Boy was the equivalent when Tomboy wasn't good. He says he gave us $2 and said, Nancy Boy, Tomboy wasn't always good. Tomboy used to be a derogatory term back when the female gender role was more strict. But even when the female gender role was more strict, there wasn't the level of condemnation for a woman who took on a masculine role. There was some level of admiration for her accomplishments. Whereas, if a guy back then would have taken on a feminine role, he might have been killed for it. So even then, it was still worse for a guy to be gender atypical.
Yeah. All right, you got the super chat out of the way, and I guess we can... Oh, yeah, somebody said something kind of interesting in the chat. I got a bit of a factoid that I didn't know about. Let's see if I can find it. It was... it was just an interesting little factoid. If I can find it. Yeah, here we go. A Danish guy says, at Honey Badger Radio, the breast physics enabled Pixar to do Monsters, Inc., though. The hair on Sullivan, that's the big blue monster from Monsters, Inc., was based on the physics engine from Dead or Alive. So boobs in Dead or Alive made the hair in Monsters, Inc. work. Who says anime titties aren't good for anything?
Boobs are magic.
Well, technically, those boobs are man-made, so since they programmed them in. Just an interesting little factoid. Thank you, a Danish guy, for that. I know it wasn't a super chat, but I thought it was good to know. So, Bob's will no longer be opened in Dead or Alive, and RIP that franchise. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next story. These are the, slightly longer ones. These are the slightly longer ones. Sorry about that. Let me go ahead and go to this. So, tell us how you really feel. The director of a women's gender and sexuality studies program wrote an opinion piece asking the following question. Why can't we hate men? And I'm asking, is this a parody or a Tumblr post? No. This is the Washington Post. I thought it'd be best to just read Susanna DeNuda Walters' own words. All right, so here's some quotes. My edge has been crossed for a long time, before President Trump, before Harvey Weinstein, before mansplaining and incels, before live streaming sexual assaults and red pill men's groups and rape camps as a tool of war and the deadening banality of male prerogatives. Seen in this indisputably true context, it seems logical to hate men. But of course, the criticisms of this blanket condemnation of men, from transnational feminists who decry such glib universalism to U.S. women of color who demand an intersectional perspective, are mostly on the mark. These critics rightly insist on an analysis of male power as institutional, not narrowly personal or individual or biologically based in male bodies. Growing movements to challenge a masculinity built on domination and violence and to engage boys and men in feminism are both gratifying and necessary. Please continue.
It seems logical to hate men, I think is a sentence everyone's already thinking about. I don't think it's logical to hate anything. Not even like sharks or spiders. It might be logical to have an ingrained sort of apprehension of them, but it's not logical to hate anything. Surely. No more than it's logical to love anyone. Mm. Right?
One would think, especially when you're talking about something in such... Like, I could see you could, hate an individual, just as you could love an individual, but I don't know, these broad groups, though, I don't know. But that I don't think that's logical, no.
My emotions in general are not logical. They're intuitive. It's intuitive to respond to your combination of your internal monologue and the things that happen around you, and your personal outlook is largely responsible for your emotional responses, no matter what happens to you. so the same two people can experience the same thing and have dramatically different emotional responses. And, yeah, there's nothing logical about that. It doesn't make it necessarily wrong how people feel about different things. Like, your conclusions can be wrong, but, it's not logical.
No, I guess not. I don't know. Okay, where was I?
Right after the break.
Yeah.
After, however, please continue.
Yeah, please continue. Right. However, Walters writes, this complexity of male domination allow us to forget these universal facts. Women experience sexual violence, and the threat of that violence permeates our choices, big and small. In addition, male violence is not restricted to intimate partner attacks or sexual assault, but plagues us in the form of terrorism and mass gun violence. Women are underrepresented in higher wage jobs, local and federal government, business, educational leadership, etc. Wage inequality continues to permeate every economy and almost every industry. Women continue to provide for higher rates of unpaid labor in the home. Examples, child care, elder care for disabled individuals, housework, and food provision. Women have less access to education, particularly at higher levels. Women have lower rates of property ownership.
So this is what's commonly known in debate circles as a gish gallop. Gish galloping is putting a bunch of talking points out there, a whole bunch of them all mashed together that it takes you 10 seconds to say it, but it would take your opponent hours to go through and lay out the counterpoints for every single one of them.
Also been known as the fire hose of shit analogy.
Yeah. Well, and with this, like, almost everything that she has said there is 100% discredited.
Absolutely.
Already in the publisher. We already know that these things are not true, or that they are largely women's choices. The one that I find the most egregious out of all of these, like, there's the lies about sexual violence, as if men don't experience sexual violence from women, and as if it isn't, you know, equally violating, and it's not equally rotten and violent and so on. But this thing about terror attacks and mass gun violence, who raised those terrorists? Who taught them when they were little kids that their inherent value as people was going to be in sacrificing themselves, strapping a bomb to their chest, walking into some place and blowing themselves up? Who taught their own children to go out and kill the other? It wasn't men. It was their mothers. And they learn these things in societies where the dominant factor in child rearing in the home is their mothers. Their mothers are the first people that teach them who they are. Their mothers are the first people who teach them what kind of value they have as people and what they need to be in order to be respected in their society and what they need to do in order to get into heaven or whatever the name for it that they have is. It's their mothers who raise them until they're old enough to start learning doctrine and understanding their scripture and so on. So when you see Islamic terrorists that come in and shoot somebody or you know, shoot up a place, or when that you see Islamic terrorists that make the news because they blew themselves up to kill a bunch of other people, that's not violence against women by men. That's violence against society by another part of society. And the mothers are major participants in it.
You know, when I see a Muslim going into a bank with their face covered, I can be pretty sure it's what kind of Muslim it is. It's a woman. Because these young men grow up with women who wear masks over their faces whenever they go out, and they grow up thinking, wow, masks are cool, I want to wear one. No, sorry, it's illegal. You have to show your face. You have to identify yourself if you're a man. So, yeah, the mask becomes one of the many forbidden fruits of this class of men, No. That was mostly a joke.
Chasing masks, I could see that. Especially when that's what you're surrounded by. Yes, you're right. All of this stuff has been debunked. And it is indeed a Gish Gallop. I have a thought about this, but I'm going to finish this point first, the reading here. So in this moment, here in the land of legislatively legitimated toxic masculinity, is it really so illogical to hate men for all the power of hashtag MeToo and hashtag Time's Up and the women's marches? Only a relatively few men have been called to task, and I've yet to see a mass wave of prosecutions or even serious recognition of wrongdoing. On the contrary, cries of witch hunt and the plotted resurrection of celebrity offenders come quick on the heels of the outcry over endemic sexual harassment and violence. But we're not supposed to hate them because hashtag not all men. If the world has little place for feminist anger, or the world has little place for feminist anger, women are supposed to support, not condemn, offer succor, not dismissal. We're supposed to feel more empathy for your fear of being called a harasser than we are for the women harassed. Walter offers a solution to men so that women don't, quote, hate you for all the millennia of woe you have produced and benefited from. This is what she offers. Lean out so we can actually just stand up without being beaten down. Pledge to vote for feminist women only. Don't run for office. Don't be in charge of anything. Step away from the power. We got this. And please know that your crocodile tears won't be wiped away by us anymore. We have every right to hate you. You have done us wrong. Because patriarchy. It is long past time to play hard for team feminism and win. Just a reminder, this isn't parody. And it was published in the Washington Post. So I have one thought about this. I think that this woman is potentially an extreme example of the kind of person that this feminist propaganda and this feminist educating can do to someone. If you create an idea in their head of what the world must be like, and that it's all men oppressing women everywhere and raping them and getting away with it and getting their jobs back, and you know, women are just like she genuinely believes in all of these places where women are disadvantaged. I think that this is what happens when the nihilism and the depression and the sadness about how hopeless everything is boils over. And she just becomes the resentful, hateful person that the people who spread these lies want. I think this is the product of that.
Just one very brief, small thought. It's almost refreshing to see a feminist so incredibly honest about their intentions.
Indeed. I agree with that. I was going to say, please, I want to see more of articles like this, actually. I want all the feminists to write articles like this so everyone can see what they actually think.
She might be overhyping it for the sake of clicks. They do this a lot in the media. It's not about the news, remember. It's about getting clicks. It's about getting papers across. So obviously they go into the opinion pieces thinking, right, how do I piss off people as much as I possibly can so that everyone's talking about this? And if that's what she did, then it kind of worked. But at the same time, it's good to hold up an example of the kind of feminists we're talking about. And they're not just fringe examples. They're the ones writing opinion pieces for the Washington Post. You know, I might do a satirical article in response. Why can't we hate women? Surely it's logical to hate women. And I'm going to have my Paul Elam moment, because everyone's going to remember that article I wrote and forget that this article ever existed. And forever, I will be famous for being the guy who said, it's logical to hate women.
All you have to do is archive the original and put a link to the original at the beginning of your parody. And then we can, you know, use it to root out the stupider among the feminists that that would do like they do with Elam's article, and they always give you the opportunity that by knee-jerk reacting to the article, they always give you the opportunity to point out their mentality. This is the mentality from which the Violence Against Women Act came. It's the mentality from which Title IX's expansions came. This is the thought process that is behind every piece of law and policy that has been passed that includes discriminatory measures that discriminate against men and for the purported benefit of women and girls. And the more it gets exposed, the better, because other people will see it for what it is. And this is something that your average person looks at this, you can say, this is why we call feminists man-hating. This is what feminism looks like when it takes the mask off. It might have been clickbait, but it's interesting enough. Clickbait is what happens when feminists accidentally tell the truth. This is what they really are underneath everything.
Yeah, what kind of clickbait does the Daily Stormer make? Is it as overt as this? I know they're not around anymore, but I'm just looking at this from another angle. Like, if somebody else wanted to make something that people would get outraged at and click on, well, and here's another thing too. You could make a hate piece article on any mainstream media website and develop tons of clicks if you wrote something like, why can't we hate black people, or why can't we hate, you know, trans people or whatever. But which is the one that you can make it on and probably risk the least amount of people leaving your website? What's the one group you can probably write something on and you're not putting as much at risk, but you're creating as much discussion? Just saying. It really boils my beans.
However much this article may be inflated for clicks, the idea that this is the kind of article that can get published, the idea that this is what passes mustard now, this is where the bar is, kind of tells us more than we could ever figure out from this woman's state of mind, to be honest. Like, it doesn't really matter who the author is, just this is what they can get away with in the Washington Post now.
There you go. All right, so I guess we'll move on to the next story, but thank you, madam, for that piece of honesty. You don't get it very often. Oh, I have some super chats. I should read those before I continue. Let's see. So, Red Moonblade gives us $2.35. That's a very specific number, but thank you. And writes, time does not exist. Tyler Preston gives us $5 and writes, to all feminists like Christy Winters, Chrissiosity, and this article's author, y'all can get F up. Humanity was a mistake. Angry face. Cyberzerk gives us 200 sex. Thank you for the sex. And writes, to hate is a complete waste of energy and time. As a bouncer, I have knocked and choked out about 40 people. If I'd hated them, all of them, I'd probably have killed them. Hate is a black hole that eats your heart. Like feminism. Well, yeah, because
it is possible to get productivity from hate if you focus it inwards. Sometimes you can't help hating any more than you can help loving. But I find if you focus it on inwards and hate everything about yourself, then you're in a position to improve things about yourself. Obviously, you can go too far in hating yourself. You can hate, you know, groups that you're in, for instance. That's one example of going too far. But yeah, don't act like you should never hate, because that's as bizarre as saying you should never love. You can't quite help it, but you can help where you focus it. And focusing it on anyone but yourself is indeed a complete waste of energy and time, I reckon, unless you're in a war. No, even if you're in a war, you still need discipline, I guess.
Yeah, I prefer when I'm like having a dispute with other people, if I can find the place of apathy towards them, I find that it actually upsets them a lot more than it upsets me. I do well. People who are your enemies, they hate it when you don't find them to be something worth troubling yourself about. So if you can do that, I find that is, you know, useful. I try to put things in perspective and say, okay, how much energy is this person worth? And when you determine that they're not worth that much, then you can actually make quite a bit of headway with that. So that's what I try to do. All right, moving on to the next story. Just a moment here, guys. I apologize. I gotta get the... All right. So, it looks like Germany wants in your bedroom. Daily Mail has published an article entitled, Germany to consider educational state-funded feminist pornography to combat sexist stereotypes. German state-funded feminist porn. That sounds so hot. The pornography would include fat, skinny, young, and old people and be available on the websites of public broadcasters. In the proposal, the SPD, which is the Social Democratic Party of Germany, wrote, "The mainstream porn generally shows sexist and racial stereotypes in which consent is not a theme and certain optimal body types are made as standard. In these films, sex seems more like a performance or competitive sport. Everything seems to work right away. There is no communication between the performers, no trying out, no failure, and no trying new things." Hake Hoffman, a socialist youth member and one of the SPD members behind the proposal, said, "In a feminist porn, there are fat, skinny, young, and old people, and the sex is enjoyed by everyone. In mainstream porn, sex is like a competitive sport, focused only on the woman who often is humiliated, and contraception does not matter. Young people should get more access to feminist porn." According to the SPD, mainstream porn influence youth in a negative way, creating unrealistic imaginations of sexual life.
So now we know they don't have access to RedTube in Germany. I'm sorry, but I gotta reread this. Mainstream porn generally shows sexist and racial stereotypes in which consent is not a theme and certain optimal body types are made as standards. In these films, sex seems more like a performance or a competitive sport. Everything seems to work right away. There's no communication between the performers, no trying out, no failure, and trying out new things. And then and the idea of there being different body types, like all the things that they're saying are untrue of free porn that's available on the internet. Like everything that they think they have to add is already there. It already exists. You can find it on the internet. You don't have to pay a dime for it. I think these guys are only...
We have a rule for it. 34. Everyone knows it.
I think these guys are actually... only watching what they can buy at sex shops.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Germany pioneer at least two or three of those mentioned types of niche porn?
Yes, yes, they have. So we have a question in the chat. How would you know, Hannah? Okay, so there's this one really weird video on RedTube of a guy actually sticking the top of his bald head inside a woman's stretched out vagina.
Oh.
Does that tell you? I look at porn. I look at different areas of porn, and there's even you know, out of the ordinary, there's the miscellaneous tab that you go into on some sites that shows odds and ends, and some of the ends are really odd. One of my friends and I, one of our fun bonding things to do together is look at the weirdest shit we can find and laugh at it.
He was giving her head.
Yeah, this is the strangest head I've ever seen given in porn, right? So if it's different and odd and unusual, like, we don't always laugh at it. Sometimes we're like, oh my god, how'd they do that? Or, you know, ew, and whatever. But this stuff is not unavailable. Like, something must be wrong in Germany where they don't have access to large sections of the internet and these people think that they don't exist.
A lot is wrong in Germany.
Because everything they're describing is already available, and if people want it, they can find it. You know, unless they're restricted from doing so by some sort of state system that doesn't let them look up their own shit on the internet.
Germany would never do that.
Yeah.
The ones I'm looking at right now, mainstream porn generally shows sexist and racist stereotypes in which consent is not a theme. Well, it's actually industry standard for the actors to consent, but they are often performing fantasies in which there's no consent. But people do that in their bedrooms as well. Are you gonna put a stop to that, or are you gonna make that another forbidden fruit, Germany? No, having sexual play or sexual role play in which anyone gets in any way surprised by the events.
It's crazy. I actually hope that that these people keep pushing for this. Let the German socialists push for feminist regulated government funded porn. I'm sure that's super hot stuff. I hope they do, because if there's one thing I've learned about the internet is porn cannot be stopped. Porn is an unstoppable force. Porn is the thing that you cannot alter, take down, or change, no matter how hard you try. Now, I understand that I believe the UK has banned some porn, but I'm sure that people who want it, they're getting it. And the only thing that's happened is that industry from within that country is probably not doing so well. But the people who want it, they're still getting it. I'd love to see them try that with Germany. I imagine it will result in catastrophic failure. It'll be like the equivalent of bread lines, but for poon, I guess. Wank lines? I don't know what you call it, but it wouldn't be very good. Please try. I'd like to see how this turns out. I want to see if somebody can defeat porn. I don't think anybody can. I bet that people in North Korea managed to get it.
If you have to go someplace to get it, then we can call them pickup lines.
Pickup lines. That's pretty good. All right. So, if there's nothing else, I guess I'll move on to... I think it's the last story, actually. So, we'll go on ahead here. All right. California love. Soon-mi Kim, 44, has been duping men in California. Shocker, it's in California. Kim would meet men on a Korean dating site, move in with them, falsely accuse them of domestic violence or robbery, and then, while they were in jail, clean out their homes, taking everything of value. Police in Mountain View, California, were conducting an investigation into Soon-mi Kim when they found that she was wanted for a parole violation in Orange County related to a 2013 conviction for almost the exact same crime. She was arrested in Mountain View and sentenced to 4 years in state prison after pleading guilty to 8 counts of false imprisonment, 4 counts of first-degree burglary, 2 counts of grand theft, and 1 count of identity theft. She has used fake names including Sunny Jean Kim, Jean Kim, Jin, and Ashley Kim to fool police and the men she meets on KoreanCupid.com, according to Mountain View Police. They believe Kim might have victimized more men, perhaps across the entire state. One of the businessmen that she was accused of conning sued the city for $150,000 after he was arrested on suspicion of domestic assault, according to the Orange County Register. He was released the next day when Irvine police recognized inconsistencies in Kim's story.
Boy, they're really lucky she got caught. This is one of those situations where it's egregious and terrible, but it actually could have been worse. There are states with their own state versions of the Violence Against Women Act where if a woman accuses a man that she is residing with or has resided with for just a few days or a few weeks of domestic violence, that entitles her to all kinds of money from him, including, you know, either he has to give up his place of residence and leave it to her and pay the bills, or he has to pay her bills to live somewhere else. And women can use this as an extortion racket in some states on an even more extensive level than this woman did. And it's all within the law, even if there's never a conviction or even a hearing. So these guys that this woman got arrested for victimizing, in a way, they lucked out simply because she's actually being held to account for what she did. And in some areas, this accountability doesn't exist.
You know, I just want to point out, she pled guilty, okay, to 8 counts of false imprisonment, 4 counts of first-degree burglary, 2 counts of grand theft, and 1 of identity theft. And for all of that, she's getting 4 years.
Brian, I'm sure she learned her lesson.
Yeah, her lesson was she should have done this in one of those other states. That's probably what she's going to figure out, that she did this in the wrong state. She needs to go to a state where they have the stipulations in their state Violence Against Women Act that, you know, the accused now has to pay all of her bills.
I hear Duluth has a certain model.
Yeah, those exist. You know, and this is why we need legal reform, because these laws allow for this type of thing to go on for years and years. That they create this type of racket. And I would bet you there are feminists out there that would look at this woman's situation and consider her the victim. Yeah, you know, so we need to, this is something that we need to fight back by eventually getting enough of us together and lobbying for legislative reform. You know, and yeah, I know women vote, but women are not the monolith that feminists want us to be. And we need to make it understood, you know, get a lot more women to understand that if they give a shit about the men in their lives, and they give a shit about their own due process rights, that they need to stop the freight train that the feminism has been running on our court system via legislation with regard to due process. It's not a woman's right to lie about somebody, have him jailed, and then take all his stuff. That's not a right because she's a woman. And this is something that needs to be turned back.
Absolutely. It's probably, like, this is probably an extreme case, but the fact that this could be allowed to happen, it's California. They're probably the most cucked state in our entire country, but at least, hopefully other states are seeing that and saying, okay, we can't let that shit happen. You know, women, they never falsely accuse. That just does, that's like 2%, I believe, is the statistic that Lacey Green has thrown around. So, doesn't really happen, guys. This is an extreme case. All right, I kid. It's obviously something that you should worry about. Field of Bears gives us $5 and says, are feminists misanthropes? Is it possible to hate a part only and not the whole? All right. So any other thoughts on this story or any of the other ones that we covered?
MGTOW is an option. Don't forget. We're, you know, trying to fix the legal shit, but this is your friendly weekly reminder that MGTOW is an option in the meantime.
Becoming more attractive by the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Right up.
In response to the super chat, I think there's a good significant portion of feminism that can be misanthropic, but I think that the primary characteristic I would attribute to both feminist leadership and feminist academia is mercenary. They are after money, and they are after political power, and hatred of men only gives them a pathway. If hating men didn't give them a pathway to money and power, they wouldn't do it.
Yep. Feminism only cares about feminism. And hating men is just a good... it's been a useful method of getting there. Or at least maintaining what they have. Okay. So, I guess if that's it, we'll go ahead and wrap up. But I want to quickly plug for you guys the after show topic. This is from the website Wired.com, entitled Spinning Lovecraft into a Feminist Dream Quest, which I can't wait to dive into because it sounds amazing. I'm sure it's just a crazy-ass story. And we're going to be talking about this in the after show. If you guys want to be a part of the after show, you'll have to be a patron. And to do that, you'll want to go to www.feedthebadger.com and become one of our patrons. Well, it's actually at patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. But you can also help us at Feed the Badger with the Calgary court thing. I'm sorry, I got that mixed up. And Allison's probably going to kill me. But anyway, so yeah, become a patron at patreon.com/HBR. And also feedthebadger.com. I'll have end screens and links and shit here so that you can do that. And if you, with one level of donation, you can watch the after show. With another level, you'll be able to join in the after show as a participant and talk about the news with us. So with that said, I want to thank you guys for joining us on this episode of HBR News. And I want to thank my panelists for joining us. And I want to thank this crazy, crazy world for giving us so much shit to talk about. We'll talk to you guys next time. And yes, I acknowledge Bane is in the chat. What's up, Bane? I'll talk to you later.